State Farm Insurance knows that understanding and investing in our cultural identity is paramount in protecting our future. We know what it's like to go from nothing to something, to wish that we had better financial literacy when we were younger. Luckily, State Farm is here to help with funding programs like Project Ready, which is committed to education achievement and has already awarded over $11 million in scholarship offers to Black and Brown youth since 2021. State Farm believes that being better neighbors creates better communities. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
What's good, everybody? It's our favorite time of the year here at The Black Effect. We're headed down to Atlanta for the 2024 Black Effect Podcast Festival, and we're not going alone. Nissan is back as our partner, and they're continuing their Pitch Your Podcast Lounge at the festival, where you'll have the opportunity to pitch your podcast idea live and share it with the Black Effect team. So get those podcast ideas ready. And remember, you can count on Nissan to dial up the thrill in your adventures, no matter where life takes you. Visit blackeffect.com/podcastfestival for more details. Black Tech Green Money Season 2, Episode 10. I'm talking with the founders and partners at Collab Capital, an investment fund helping Black founders build sustainable innovation-centered businesses. The partners, Barry Givens, Jewel Burks, and Justin Dawkins, are previous operators and engineers who've raised significant venture capital and successfully sold their companies. I posed the question to the group about an idea that we talk often about in Black Tech, that we're often too over-mentored and underfunded. With that being true, what still is needed non-monetarily for founders to realize the fullest potential of their startups? Justin Dawkins, partner at Collab, answers.
One of the things that is often, just one of many things that's often missing, is usually promised, which is, oh, we're gonna be your partners. We're going to do the things that we need to do to sidecar the capital, right, that's going into the business. But the level of intentionality is not always there, which is the commitment, the willingness to get into the weeds. And as experienced operators, all three of us having built different types of businesses and helped to create other types of businesses, we recognize and understand that sometimes the best investors are experienced operators, folks who understand how to kind of get into the weeds, how to identify business models and opportunities, and then build out of that experience as opposed to just bringing capital. And then the other thing is access to networks, right? So yeah, business is still relationship centric. And so no matter how many machines and artificial intelligence we put in place, we need relationships and, you know, two notches above warm intros. We need highly intentional relationships that are developed and nurtured. And so there's lines of trust so that our founders can get into the doors, secure the conversations that they need to have, and get the deals actually done. And so those are the things that we are actually focused on and collab through our non-capital contributions and investments.
I'm Will Lucas, and this is Black Tech, Green Money. I'm gonna introduce you to some of the biggest names, some of the brightest minds, and brilliant ideas. If you're Black in building or simply using tech to secure your bag, this podcast is for you. Sean Mendy is a co-founding partner at Concrete Rose, which invests financial and social capital into exceptional ventures led by underrepresented founders of color, founders addressing the needs of underrepresented consumers of color, and founders with a demonstrated commitment to creating inclusive cultures and building diverse teams. Before VC, he was VP of Development and a member of the board of directors at the Boys and Girls Clubs of the Peninsula. So how did he find his way into VC, investing in startups? I asked him about his journey.
Yeah, it's more complicated than just what I was doing, you know, right before launching the fund. So long career trying to drive impact. And actually, so growing up, you know, Magic Johnson was my hero, less for what was happening on the court and more for what he was doing in terms of, you know, changing communities by building businesses, right? And so, you know, planned on doing that. Right out of college, founded a company myself. Simplest way to describe it is a tech-enabled diversity recruiting platform. Had some marginal success raising money, some marginal success with users. 08 happens, economy tanks, folks who are getting jobs are getting laid off before they even start. The jobs just don't exist. And, you know, didn't love, you know, basically running an HR firm. So got out of that. And then did some late stage tech or some later stage tech, still I would be considered early, but later than the previous startup. trying to drive social impact at a company called Causes. It was the first app on Facebook. But I've been thinking, you know, tech was a way to drive impact, you know, since I first got out of school. I started working at a Boys and Girls Club accidentally. I grew up in Silicon Valley. I had, you know, friends in all the different neighborhoods that exist here. I saw, you know, the opportunities that were given to folks depending on zip code, depending on what school they went to, depending on did your companies, you know, did they own true equity in Intel and HP and that Cisco generation of tech companies, or did you just work there, or were you working at the restaurant that Cisco employees were going to? So I saw all these things happening, and really, you know, thought, all right, let me go. I'm gonna volunteer at this Boys and Girls Club. I'm gonna meet five black males. I'm gonna mentor them and help them get the opportunities I got so that they could end up, you know, participating in what's happening here in a different way than they would had there not been this intervention. Somehow the five kids became 50, became 500. And, you know, thought, all right, education is how I'm going to change the world.
I want to let you finish that because you've pointed out some things I'm going to come back to. But go ahead and finish.
All right, let's come back to that. So really, you know, to accelerate the story a bit, you know, after thinking I'm going to do education, going and studying ed policy at Stanford, you know, getting an MBA, and thinking, you know, I'm never coming back to this Boys and Girls Club, the CEO there called me and said, hey, you know, you actually ran programs, you developed and designed these programs, let's scale them now, and let's do a campaign to meet the demand in Silicon Valley for all these families and students that are not, you know, getting what the resources they need to really participate in what's happening here. So came back, raised, I had a plan to raise $10 million in 1 year, and ended up raising closer to 50 in four. And in doing that, it was kind of this hack into understanding who in Silicon Valley truly cares about the opportunity gap, who wants to make sure that Silicon Valley is a place that is a true meritocracy, and where, you know, it doesn't matter what family you're born into, you're going to get a shot at getting an education and doing what needs to be done to be able to access, you know, the opportunity in Silicon Valley. And, you know, the chairs of this campaign, you know, we started with Condi Rice chairing the campaign. So it was starting with Condi Rice's address book, and going and meeting folks with her making the introduction. So we built this incredible network of folks who were, you know, committed to our mission, happened to be running the biggest companies in the world. You know, everybody from Sundar Pichai to Kevin Durant was involved in this organization. And so was able to build really authentic relationships with folks on this important issue. I realized, you know, the things that we were addressing were very important to individual lives. We were not addressing the root cause of inequality. The root cause of inequality is wealth. We have the opportunity to create it. And so 4 years ago, I started, you know, thinking, what can I actually do to address that? I started sharing that vision with the folks that I had met through my previous work. And that's what ultimately led to being able to launch Concrete Roads.
And so you kind of touched on a couple of things that really sparked my interest just now. And one of them is that, you know, you were intrigued by people who worked at some of these big companies and they weren't just in the kitchen. Like, you grew up in the Bay Area. And so I would imagine, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I would imagine you grew up seeing innovation happen very quickly because of the ecosystem. Is that correct?
Yeah, I grew up, you know, watching families that I knew that I was proximate to doing things that literally were changing the world. Yeah. And it was normal to me. I also was aware that this was not normal, you know, outside of Silicon Valley, right? Especially when I went to school on the East Coast, and folks, you know, my college roommate was from LA, and he was just like, LA, you know, the typical LA, NorCal, SoCal rivalry. And he just didn't understand the things that were happening in Silicon Valley. And that's when I realized, all right, this is not, especially folks of color, aren't aware of the things that are happening here, and we're going to miss out on what's happening if we don't figure out some ways to actually educate folks on what's happening.
Hey, everybody, this is Carrie Champion, and I'm here to announce that the 2024 Black Effect Podcast Festival is headed to Atlanta's very own Pullman Yards on April 27th. Last year was incredible, and this year will be even more thrilling, especially with Nissan coming back along for the ride. Nissan is returning with some empowering activations to support Black excellence in the STEAM fields. have a podcast idea you've been eager to share with the culture? Well, Nissan is back with your Pitch Your Podcast Lounge. You'll have the chance to record your podcast idea and have it shared with the Black Effect Podcast Network team. But that's not all. Nissan is taking the stage to spotlight some of the HBCU scholars from their own Thrill of Possibility Summit, Nissan's action-packed weekend of community building, mentorship, and professional development for HBCU scholars pursuing professions in STEAM. The Black Effect Podcast Festival is the event you want to be at. You don't want to miss it because no matter where life takes you, Nissan will dial up the thrill in your adventures. Visit blackeffect.com/podcastfestival for more details.
State Farm Insurance gets it. Representation alone doesn't equate to authenticity. State Farm understands and wants to help protect our communities by investing in our future. Building off the hard work our parents have done before us, we all are looking to create generational wealth so that our families and generations behind us have a better starting point than we did. That begins with financial literacy. State Farm helps fund programs like Project Ready, a National Urban League program committed to the educational achievement of Black and Brown youth. To date, participants have been awarded over $11 million in scholarships offers as a direct result of contributions from State Farm. At Eating While Broke, we hear inspiring rags-to-riches stories on each episode from our guests, but with State Farm, you can begin to write your own success story. State Farm believes that being better neighbors creates better communities and have a long-lasting impact. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Yeah, so digging into that, you know, so often we hear that sometimes we don't get the opportunities to engage early enough in, you know, these opportunities for innovation because we're not around those ecosystems, yeah. You know, early enough to, number one, appreciate that innovation is happening. Like I grew up in the Midwest. So I grew up in the people who were working around me were manufacturing cars, you know, and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And so I respect that you recognize that most of the world didn't see that. I wonder what advantages you think that plays into your psyche today, being a Black man who grew up in Silicon Valley or in the Bay Area more broadly. How do you think about, because you just mentioned the inequality is rooted in wealth, that wealth gap. How do you view our opportunity with engaging in innovation in order to create wealth when most of us don't grow up like you grew up?
Yeah, I mean, even as somebody who grew up here, I still didn't have the risk tolerance that some folks had to be able to, you know, to do the things that that you needed to truly be able to take advantage of the opportunities that are happening here. Like, I was a founder myself, but I also still had a job. Like, I had a part-time job that I didn't care about because I needed to be able to eat, right? And when I did start to have some success professionally, it was very hard to, you know, eventually break away and go back to essentially being a startup founder when I launched Concrete Rose with my partner, right? There was no guarantee that it was going to work. And, you know, I would also just still say that, hey, like, you know, more people know about what's happening in Silicon Valley. I guess it's marginally easier to get involved. There's still many barriers to true participation here. And, you know, in relation to wealth and, you know, inequality and the wealth gap, you know, I think the wealth gap, you know, there was absolutely malintent in how the wealth gap was initially created.
Yeah.
I think there was explicitly discriminatory practices. You know, let's go back further. 400 years ago, anybody who looked like us in this country literally is capital for the most part, right? With a few exceptions. 100 years ago, you know, the government-run programs that built the middle class, we did not have access to them. Whether it's the GI Bill, the Homestead Act, access to home loans, and then even, you know, 50 or 60 years ago, places like Silicon Valley were truly forming, you got redlining. And, you know, we're still even shut out of the neighborhoods where the wealth is truly being created. So it was not, you know, it didn't happen accidentally. It was intentional, and it was, you know, it was malicious and exclusionary. I think now it's being perpetuated just due to inertia. So I think that unless folks are actively creating interventions to intentionally and inclusively build wealth going forward by being more inclusive, by finding ways to bring, you know, folks from diverse backgrounds, into the fold earlier. You know, how do we make them employee, you know, 6 or employee even 60? So they actually own pieces of these companies that are being scaled. How do we educate folks on how to take the risk to actually do that? How do you get somebody to leave their job at Microsoft, you know, to take a lower base salary, but a higher, you know, have higher upside in the long run at one of these companies? Those are the things that I'm trying to figure out. And those are the things that we're trying to do at Concrete Rose. And that's the whole, you know, part of the thesis of our fund is that, you know, underrepresented talent is not limited to founders, right? There's a lot of funds who are focused on underrepresented founders, diverse founders. We absolutely look for underrepresented founders. 2/3 of our portfolio is Black and Latino led. 50% of the fund portfolio is women led companies. But what we also really look for is who are the right founders that we should be working with, regardless of their background, who want to build these diverse teams, who are going to build the biggest companies, and how do we partner with them to ensure that they have an employee number 6 is a Black woman, yeah, or employee number 100 is, you know, an LGBTQ professional. So that's, I think, the key is to find the folks who care. And I think that the cheat code for me was working on a very local problem with global leaders and knowing, all right, if I go to Jeff Weiner, he's going to care about this at LinkedIn, right? I don't need to convince him. I need to share with him what we're trying to do, and he's going to help me do that. That was the advantage of being here.
And so I'm going to come back to this idea that you help early stage companies build diverse teams. We're going to come back there. I want to set, you know, more of a foundational idea first, a foundational concept. And so in founding Concrete Rose, this is an arm of Next Play Ventures, right? And so
Concrete Rose is totally independent of Next Play. We're strategic partners with Next Play.
Okay, you're strategic partner. Okay. So you're the founder or one of the, you have a partner, correct?
Okay.
And
yeah, I've got 3.
When the idea here, as I understand it, was to create the social impact affiliate, you know, so you want to focus on those pieces that Next Play maybe needed assistance or had gaps, and maybe you come in and fill that gap for them. Can you define, first of all, social impact from the perspective of venture capital and why it was important for you to, why were you uniquely situated to take advantage of this opportunity?
Yeah, I mean, so I would say one, you know, my experiences growing up here, my experiences working in the communities here that have kind of been left behind, the neighborhoods that have been left behind, or in some many cases driven out, right? The gentrification have given me a unique perspective into what's been happening both locally in Silicon Valley and the global impact that Silicon Valley is having. I've understood the wealth being created here, how the cost of living has gone up, how folks, low-income folks, which have mostly been folks of color, have either had to, you know, sell grandma's house and move to Central California or the East Bay, or, you know, or who are living here and are really struggling. So I have that unique perspective. And then I also have the perspective of understanding that the decisions that are made here, the decisions that are made in tech, and when I say Silicon Valley now, I just mean the proverbial Silicon Valley, not, you know, Silicon Valley as a mindset, not necessarily as a geography. You know, this Silicon Valley is influencing and building the future. And so I saw you know, there were some personal experiences I had with friends, with folks who are leaders at some of the most influential companies in the world, where I literally could see decisions that they were making impacting, like, geopolitics. I could see them, you know, decisions being made at some of these, you know, FAANG companies in good and bad ways, you know, impacting the world. And so that to me was like, was a exclamation point on the importance for having diversity at these massive companies. If you don't have diversity in these rooms, you are just not making the best decisions, right? You need different perspectives. You can't have groupthink. You need to have different life experiences informing, you know, the decisions that you're making in these companies. So that was the perspective that I brought, was understanding the wealth being created, understanding the impact that we were having globally by decisions being made in Silicon Valley. You know, in terms of being an impact fund, so, you know, my partnership with Jeff and Next Play Ventures, you know, I had worked with Jeff on the local issue. I told him that I thought I saw a way for us to create a fund that would be impacting the racial wealth gap and bringing more diversity into tech. The way that we think about social impact, Impact is actually less about being an impact fund that invests in, you know, companies that are focused on ed tech or climate, or I mean, we have companies within our portfolio that fall into both those buckets. But it's actually more about investing in great companies and encouraging them and partnering with them to be more inclusive, right? So whether it's, you know, investing directly into underrepresented founders, obviously that's going to be, you know, impactful, and that's going to generate wealth for underrepresented folks. But also if we're investing in companies that have founders who may not be underrepresented themselves, but if we can help the next Stuart Butterfield of Slack build a company and hire Black women, you know, as the first 20 employees, or within the first 20 employees, like that's going to also generate wealth for that group. The next thing that we've actually done is we've pledged 50% of our carry to our sister Concrete Rose Community Foundation. The foundation funds innovative solutions addressing racial inequality across the country. So we have a broad vision for where the foundation will ultimately go. We've narrowed it down to start with organizations that are focused on education or employment as a starting point for phase one. But we've already actually have some resources that we're deploying there. I partner with great organizations like Color Wave and Color Stack and Dev Color and Management Leadership for Tomorrow, Harlem Children's Zone, and are really trying to catalyze more innovation by those nonprofits and with those leaders, and then also connect it to industry and to tech. So we're creating this community that's going to be impactful both to the companies that we invest in and the way that wealth is created, but then also by the way we're explicitly funding social impact through the nonprofit partners that we work with.
Hey, everybody, this is Carrie Champion, and I'm here to announce that the 2024 Black Effect Podcast Festival is headed to Atlanta's very own Pullman Yards on April 27th. Last year was incredible, and this year will be even more thrilling, especially with Nissan coming back along for the ride. Nissan is returning with some empowering activations to support Black excellence in the STEAM fields. Have a podcast idea you've been eager to share with the culture? Well, Nissan is back with your Pitch Your Podcast Lounge. You'll have the chance to record your podcast idea and have it shared with the Black Effect Podcast Network team. But that's not all. Nissan is taking the stage to spotlight some of the HBCU scholars from their own Thrill of Possibility Summit, Nissan's action-packed weekend of community building, mentorship, and professional development for HBCU scholars pursuing professions in STEAM. The Black Effect Podcast Festival is the event you want to be at. You don't want to miss it because no matter where life takes you, Nissan will dial up the thrill in your adventures. Visit blackeffect.com/podcastfestival for more details.
State Farm Insurance gets it. Representation alone doesn't equate to authenticity. State Farm understands and wants to help protect our communities by investing in our future. Building off the hard work our parents have done before us, we all are looking to create generational wealth so that our families and generations behind us have a better starting point than we did. That begins with financial literacy. State Farm helps fund programs like Project Ready, a National Urban League program committed to the educational achievement of Black and Brown youth. To date, participants have been awarded over $11 million in scholarships offers as a direct result of contributions from State Farm. At Eating While Broke, we hear inspiring rags-to-riches stories on each episode from our guests, but with State Farm, you can begin to write your own success story. State Farm believes that being better neighbors creates better communities and have a long-lasting impact. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Opportunity is not equally distributed. To every Black entrepreneur listening, I want to make sure you have the tools and resources you need to grab your next opportunity. That's why I'm telling you about the 1 Million Black Businesses Initiative. The 1 Million Black Businesses Initiative is an award-winning program created by Shopify and Operation Hope. They're on a mission to start, grow, and scale 1 million Black businesses by 2030, driving wealth creation for the Black community. Out of 6 million employer-owned businesses in the U.S., only 2.3% have Black ownership. This program gives Black entrepreneurs tools and resources to level the playing field, from free business coaching to tailored training and extended free Shopify trial. Shopify's made a 10-year, multi-million dollar commitment to the program, and it's working. The initiative already started, supported, and engaged with over 334,000 Black businesses, helping them operate businesses that sell anything from skateboards to coffee beans to apparel. Business owners love this program. Simone Harvin, founder of SC Creative Group, says, "The 1 million Black businesses experience for me was unlike any other program I've been a part of, primarily because it was for us and it was by us." Here at Drink Champs, we are always interacting with our listeners, many being Black entrepreneurs. Shopify is one of those platforms that empowers and emboldens entrepreneurship. So chart your own path for business success with the 1 million Black Businesses Initiative and Shopify. Bring your business to Shopify with an exclusive 120-day free trial at shopify.com/BEN, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/BEN.
So I want to pick up something you just said there, because if I heard you correctly, you're not particularly focused on a specific vertical like gaming or healthcare, et cetera. How, and if that's correct, how can you build a domain expertise if you think you need it in order to be able to make good bets?
Yeah, I think we need to be smart. We need to understand anything we're investing in. We're generalists for a reason that's consistent with our mission, right? So we want to invest in underrepresented founders as often as possible. And, you know, due to kind of the compounding inequality, the compounding lack of access for folks of color, we didn't see a critical mass of, you know, founders in one specific vertical. We thought, let's keep our optionality. Let's see what's actually out there in the ecosystem. Let's help develop the ecosystem. What we did do is we raised our fund from some of the, you know, the most successful operators and investors in tech and venture. And we engaged them both in how we're sourcing and diligencing companies and also supporting them post-investment. And so if you, you know, run an enterprise tech company, I'm going to engage Xander Lurie, the CEO of Serving Monkey, now Momentive, or Mikkel Svein at Zendesk, or Smith, formerly of Intuit. And I'm going to engage them as supporters of what you're doing, either strategic advisors, mentors, making customer introductions, making talent introductions. So we've got this we'll call the Concrete Rose network that we leverage that I think gives us a major competitive advantage. The social capital that comes from that network is really critical to the success of any founder, but specifically the Concrete Rose founders that we've had. So to answer your question explicitly, no sector focus. We won't invest in a sector that we can't learn and understand, but we also leverage these operators and investors to really, to bolster the support for the companies that we do invest in.
Do you find yourself at any regular interval being first money in?
You know, one thing that we actually really like to do is, kind of punch above our weight. So, we started with a $10 million proof of concept fund is what we went out. The fund ended up being $25 million. But when we started investing from it, we figured it would be $10 million. And so we got allocations that were bigger than what we were able to take. And so we actually went to that network and thought who would strategically be helpful to these companies. So one example is a company called Esusu. They're a company that allows consumers to build credit scores by paying their rent. They actually don't sell to consumers. They sell directly to property owners. They have some incredible partnerships, and the founders are amazing. Met the founders, it was very early, and actually, only invested a fourth of the amount that we actually accounted for when we consider who we brought in as strategic investors alongside of us. And so that's how we like to make rounds happen. So we'll come in with other folks that we have pulled in historically. That's what we moving forward. We're actually looking to be first money in more situations. It has typically been when we've gotten serious about that with founders who are repeat founders, or something we can underwrite, because it's very hard to invest in somebody that has no track record and hasn't built anything yet, isn't out selling anything yet. But we're open to it. Like there's no we don't have a hard and fast rule of being too early.
On your website, it talks about you wake up every day excited to meet brilliant entrepreneurs and leaders with ambitious plans to build the future. The train of thought you were just on, how do you balance ambition as a VC with working to make also smart bets? Because, if you could reconcile for me, often smart bets, if you think about smart bets and ambition, sometimes ambition flies in the face of logic.
Yeah, I think there's such thing as rational ambition, and it can manifest itself in the form of vision, a big vision. We don't want to invest in founders who want to build nice businesses that make $10 million a year in perpetuity, and you know, maybe $2 million of that is profit. So that's a very nice life, and that's, you know, that is a successful business. That's not a venture scalable business. So we're looking for folks who have that broad vision, but can also kind of see the forest through the trees, right? Are you pragmatic, and can you actually operationalize that vision? Is the way that we really think about it. So I think we'll underwrite for both. Are you somebody who thinks big, but are you also somebody who gets things done, understands how to prioritize and how to have a process? So that's actually not very difficult. I don't think. I think it would be more of a way to confirm that we'd be out on something is if the founder is not, if we don't see any signals of this founder thinking very big and being ambitious. I don't think we've got the problem in the reverse.
Yeah. When you were talking about, you know, helping startups develop diverse teams, how I translated that, and you can correct me if any part of this doesn't make sense to what actually is reality. What I understand then is, you know, this is not like we're not investing in, you know, white male Stanford dropout, you know, companies, but we're also really emphasizing that, hey, white male Stanford dropout, you know, that there are some really qualified people who may be from, you know, underserved, under-resourced communities who are talented, have skills, and you can contribute to the growth of your enterprise. And that's important to you. So how often, though, when entrepreneurs come to VCs, they just want the money. Like, give me the money, probably a little bit of your network. And how do you hold them accountable to that, if you can hold them accountable to diversity at its core?
There's three kinds of founders that we're looking at back. One, we're looking to back talented, underrepresented founders. And then we are looking to, and we focus on Black and Latino founders. 50% of our portfolio is women founders, but we are explicitly going out and looking to fund racially underrepresented founders. And we pour social capital into them through that Concrete Rose network that I've referenced. Next, we're looking for founders who are building to meet the needs of underrepresented consumers. And they don't need to explicitly be building solely for underrepresented consumers, right? So you don't need to be building fintech products for Latino families. If you're building a sustainability or climate tech startup, that's interesting to us. And we actually want to, you know, we want to influence companies to be building in a way that does benefit underrepresented consumers, right? Given, especially in a space like climate tech, you know, who's going to be affected by climate change first is people of color, right? Because of some historical things that have happened. The final, you know, focus area that we look at is founders of all backgrounds, who have a deep and authentic commitment to building inclusive organizations and diverse teams. So, you know, you referenced, you know, Stanford, you know, white male Stanford dropout. We actually haven't invested in any white male Stanford dropouts. We've invested in white male Stanford business school graduates who have, you know, who are the most overrepresented, right? Like experience at like Amazon, McKinsey, and private equity.
Yeah.
Literally, we've backed a team of three white guys coming out of Stanford Business School with that background, right? What we're looking for is folks who understand the value of diversity to business outcome. So we underwrite for this. We have many conversations with folks. We have to see a demonstration of an understanding of, hey, I want to build a diverse team, not purely because I want to be altruistic, not purely because, you know, I'm a progressive and I want to, you know, see a rainbow coalition. It's because I understand my business is going to be better by having a diverse team, by having the perspectives of a diverse group of people working on this problem. Second, we're looking for some actual demonstrated commitment of that. That could look like, you know, we have one founder who has explicitly, as their third, you know, third or fourth hire, hired a, you know, diversity manager from Facebook and said, I did that because I want somebody building these programs in my company early, and she's going to lead my HR function. But that was important. That's very tied to business. It's very easy to draw a straight line there. We've also backed a founder who, you know, his college thesis on access to AP and IB courses for underrepresented students. And that was how we checked that box of, right, this founder actually cares about, authentically cares about diversity, has a real interest there, and understands the importance of it. And the last thing we do is actual reference checks. This is prior to investing, of course, where we actually look for inclusive behavior. We look for coachability. You know, the way that we're going to be working with these founders, we're going to ask them to do some things that are not always intuitive and that might make them feel like, hey, you're kind of slowing me down a bit. If we're saying, all right, you've posted this role, you know, the candidates that you're looking at are all folks that you've been friends with for 10 years from your social networks. Let's go find a couple of candidates from outside your immediate network, because that's where you can actually find, you know, find diverse candidates, right? And so we need to see that coachability as well. Post-investment, we're ensuring that we have quarterly touch points with folks where we're actually, you know, engaging them with programming that helps them actually walk the walk around defining core values in a way that's inclusive, living your actual values in the way that you actually behave, and operationalizing that those values within your company processes and systems, right? So we don't, there's no scorecard that we're holding up, or not, because you're never going to be done. This is something that's dynamic and you're going to always be working on. But as we onboard companies into our portfolio, they understand all the things that we offer. And then we are ensuring that monthly and quarterly, we are engaging them on these things. And then, and we're using kind of our judgment on when we should lean in more, when we should lean in less. And the thing that's been very exciting for us is, I think we've made it's 8 or 9 investments in that third focus area. So folks who are not underrepresented themselves, want to build diverse and inclusive teams. And we have had no problem having them, you know, be thirsty for the engagement and looking to us for guidance, and reaching out to us and being somewhat demanding in terms of what we're offering. So I have an incredible colleague, Denai Sterenthal, who leads the coaching of CEOs. I have another incredible partner, Jason Norman, who's leading the talent sourcing for those organizations. But it hasn't been a problem in terms of holding folks accountable. They want it.
Hey, everybody, this is Carrie Champion, and I'm here to announce that the 2024 Black Effect Podcast Festival is headed to Atlanta's very own Pullman Yards on April 27th. Last year was incredible, and this year will be even more thrilling, especially with Nissan coming back along for the ride. Nissan is returning with some empowering activations to support Black excellence in the STEAM fields. Have a podcast idea you've been eager to share with the culture? Well, Nissan is back with your Pitch Your Podcast Lounge. You'll have the chance to record your podcast idea and have it shared with the Black Effect Podcast Network team. But that's not all. Nissan is taking the stage to spotlight some of the HBCU scholars from their own Thrill of Possibility Summit. Nissan's action-packed weekend of community building, mentorship, and professional development for HBCU scholars pursuing professions in STEAM. The Black Effect Podcast Festival is the event you want to be at. You don't want to miss it, because no matter where life takes you, Nissan will dial up the thrill in your adventures. Visit blackeffect.com/podcastfestival for more details.
State Farm Insurance gets it. Representation alone doesn't equate to authenticity. State Farm understands and wants to help protect our communities by investing in our future. Building off the hard work our parents have done before us, we all are looking to create generational wealth so that our families and generations behind us have a better starting point than we did. That begins with financial literacy. State Farm helps fund programs like Project Ready, a National Urban League program committed to the educational achievement of Black and Brown youth. To date, participants have been awarded over $11 million in scholarships offers as a direct result of contributions from State Farm. At Eating While Broke, we hear inspiring rags-to-riches stories on each episode from our guests, but with State Farm, you can begin to write your own success story. State Farm believes that being better neighbors creates better communities and have a long-lasting impact. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
There was, in reading your story, I mean, you're from the Bay Area, you're investing in the Bay Area, and I'm super interested in your take on this, because as you know, that technology development is becoming more geographically dispersed. There was research thing that came out, I think it was in QZ a couple of days ago, and a VC friend of mine had posted it on Twitter, and it was talking about how the change in the number of tech workers, like where they're moving to, and like San Francisco was like the last place losing population, and like places like Miami, Atlanta, Houston are severely increasing in where tech workers are moving. What does that mean to you from both an investor's perspective, someone who's investing in Silicon Valley, and as a man who wants to see more Black people in this business, taking advantage of this wealth generation opportunity?
Yeah, so when we stood up our firm, you know, we knew we'd get access to great deals because of who our LPs are, the network that we've built over you know, decades, you know, working in this geographic location. But we also realized that, you know, leveraging a Silicon Valley network to find underrepresented talent is not going to work. Just because of the way the networks work, and a homogenous network is going to beget a homogenous network, right? So we explicitly built a scout program that I'm actually not allowed to call a scout program. We called it an ambassador program. Our lawyers gave us that guidance, where we found folks outside of the Bay, in places like Chicago and St. Louis, and you know, and New York and Texas and DC, and you know, these are folks who are already plugged into tech and venture in those areas, but they weren't attached to firms. And we gave them kind of the title of an ambassador and gave them some training, and they sent us deals. And I think a combination of that, and we did this for the purpose of finding, you know, a more diverse set of entrepreneurs to invest in. A combination of that plus, you know, 4 months into the life of our firm, you know, shelter in place happening, as of the end of the last quarter, over 80% of our portfolio is outside of the Bay Area.
Wow.
And so I think combination of Zoom meetings plus the effectiveness of this ambassador network, which we have some exciting things happening with that I will share with you first once we're ready to announce it.
Yes.
So we haven't had a problem. I think we actually, our two most recent investments are one's in Menlo Park and one's in San Francisco. So that number will tick down a bit, still overwhelmingly spread across the country. And I think that speaks to the point that, you know, talent is everywhere. I think because of the acceleration of technology and new innovations in technology, it's also cheaper and you're able to do things outside of the Bay that you've never been able to do. So I think we got to keep, you know, if we're only looking in Silicon Valley, we're not going to find, you know, those overlooked founders that we're looking for. We're not going to find the deal that should be more competitive than it is, but because of where it is geographically, we're able to get in at a price that we like and really make a difference for that founder. So it's imperative that we're looking outside of the Bay.
You know, you had touched on just really briefly that you're not specifically looking for technology or products or businesses that are trying to build for Black audiences, but maybe leverage the diversity, the conversation that we bring, the perspective that we bring. And I wonder, because there are so many times when we build companies, we get pigeonholed into, are you building, you know, the next hair care company? And that's okay, but we get pigeonholed into these verticals. I wonder, from your perspective as a VC and somebody who's seen innovation happen, you know, faster than most people because of the way you grew up, I wonder if you see where the Black perspective could be more amplified in enterprise startup, you know, development in sectors that are not traditionally Black, but where we could have a unique value proposition to play in.
I think it's every sector. I think there's some where it's explicit, you know, health tech, we should definitely be leaning in there. I think, you know, Black and brown and women's health has been underinvested in, and there has been a lack of focus there. So I think that's a very obvious one, right? Even, you know, one of our early investments was in a company that that was focused on you know, they're optimizing birth control. So they're helping women find the right birth control through a DNA and a hormonal test, at-home test that you would do. But the broader vision is to use the data that's being collected to actually build more diverse and inclusive data sets that can be used to drive healthcare solutions. Just because most clinical trials and most healthcare studies historically have been over-indexed to white men and women, right? And so there's all this data that's just missing for folks who don't fall into that category. And so that's really important for us to be building in that space, and to be influencing that space. Just really, it's important to our lives, right? Then there's other, you know, spaces like fintech and where it's also kind of a straight line that you can draw there. But really, I think every sector, man, like you know, life experience informs expertise and outlook. And the more perspectives you can get in a room that are not the same, the better the more magic's gonna happen, the better outcomes you're gonna have. So I can't, you know, I wouldn't limit it to one sector. I think every sector from health tech and ed tech to enterprise tech could use diverse perspectives. And I'm interested in seeing diversity in all the areas.
Black Tech Green Money is a production of Blavity Afrotech on the Black Effect Podcast Network and iHeartMedia. It's produced by Morgan DeMond and me, Will Lucas, with additional production support by Love Beecham and Marissa Lewis. Special thank you to Micah Davis, Adam Sims, and Sakara Savagnon. You know, like the wine? Yes, that's his real name. Learn more about my guests and other tech disruptors and innovators at afrotech.com. The video version of this episode will drop to Black Tech Green Money on YouTube next week, so tap in. Enjoying Black Tech Green Money? Leave us a 5-star rating on iTunes. Go get your money. Peace and love.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.